moxie, force of character, determination, or nerve. I'm Sierra Benson, and you're listening to The Moxie Mindset. Podcast is designed to help you grow a healthier, growth-oriented mindset. I've reached out to college professors and professionals who have agreed to come into the studio to help us learn more in depth about the communication and leadership skills we need to succeed. Thank you for joining us on The Moxie Mindset. I'm super stoked for today's episode. Dan Collette is an internationally known behavioral consultant who has taught and coached both senior leaders of organizations and companies, as well as individuals on their quest to lead purposely to achieve results. For over 30 years, his expertise has led leaders through challenges of growth, financial setbacks, talent building, and selection, and most importantly, teaching them to lead consciously. Dan has a unique and powerful way of building upon the deep research of behavioral sciences to assist others in understanding why they do what they do, and then offering a different way to think and do to get the results they want. Dan's observation is we live too much on autopilot and not living consciously, therefore missing the opportunities and experiences we seek both in our personal and professional lives. The greatest challenge we all face now is the overwhelming tsunami of change associated with COVID. It has impacted every aspect of our lives. The associated disorientation resulting from this change can be daunting, if not paralyzing. Join us as we'll learn how to motivate and thrive through change and not be stymied or blocked. Thank you for coming on today, Dan. It's really been a pleasure to get to know you more through this. And I really wanted to talk a lot about your subject today. You picked motivating change when shift happens. And that's so funny to me. But at the same time, we are going through some of the biggest shifts in our life. And I've noticed that a lot of people are either having a really, really difficult time through it, or they're kind of thriving in it. Why do we sometimes love change, and why do we sometimes hate it?
Thank you, Sierra. It's a great question. You couldn't have said it any better. In the last 6 months, we as a world have probably faced more amount of change than any other decade. It's just been global because of the pandemic. You add to that any number of other challenges that come with it. We've got civil unrest issues. We've got fires burning out of control that are threatening people's lives. And we have got hurricanes that are battling Louisiana and Texas. You know, change is constant. And more all the time, the competency that we look for in people is how do they become change resilient? And so your question is a good one. Why does some change work for me and I embrace it, and others, I just resist it? And it all starts with really how the brain processes the stimulants of change, the event of change. And what I find, Sierra, is that it's not change that you and I really resist. It's the disorientation that's associated with change. Think about how much of your daily life is based upon patterns, routines that just make up your day. And have you ever had that routine interrupted, changed? And it just throws you off the rest of the day. I mean, it can be as simple as I get up in the morning and I go have a hot shower and, oh, by the way, there's no hot water. Or you get up in the morning and you always have a cup of coffee and you don't get it. Those little things just shift the paradigm that we are used to. So what we find is that change is just a process of a disorientation for what you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, when we look at what causes our behavior with change, we have to understand how the brain operates. And the neurosciences in the last 10 years have just become abundant with understanding how it functions and how it controls us. So what we need to understand before we can understand why I resist it or why I embrace it, we need to understand what the brain's doing with a stimulus called change. Let me start also by suggesting we're going to identify that change is as simple as this isn't what I expected or it's something new. Pretty simple. And if you just use that definition of change, think of how many times in a day you encounter something that is new or you didn't expect. I often, when I'm working with clients, I'll say, just open your inbox of your email. And I guarantee you, given my definition, there are at least a dozen changes. Now, oftentimes, the changes that we're facing are very similar to what we have done before. And that just seems nothing. It's easy for us to do because we're familiar with that disorientation. It's when something comes up that is just so different. The pandemic is so different. Nobody that I know that's alive, with maybe some very, very old people, can remember the pandemic of 1917. So this whole concept of a whole world coming to a stop and ways of living coming to a stop, that was really something new, something we did not expect. So going back to the brain for a second, it turns out that when we encounter change, the brain must process it in a predictable and sequential way. As a result of that, our behavior is both predictable and sequential. The first thing that our brain must satisfy is the demands of what you call the reptilian brain. That's the part of our brain that sits on the top of our it's called the brain stem. And the reptilian or the primitive brain is what controls all of our automatic processes, our breathing, respiration, our heart rates, all of that. Now, notice, you don't spend any conscious moments thinking about that unless it's compromised. Now, this part of our brain also controls the fight or flight syndrome. So whenever we encounter something that's new and not expected, the reptilian brain immediately kicks in and starts to look through any of the neural pathways or the memories we've got to go, is this safe? Is this something I've dealt with before? If it is not something you're familiar with, the reptilian brain just puts on either the screeching brakes, no, do not proceed, or you run like the dickens. Pretend like it's not even happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah. And so what we experience is when change occurs, there's a loss. That's the primary experience. If nothing more, it's the loss of the predictable. You broke my pattern. So for all of us listening on this podcast, think of how many of us were planning for end of school year last year in anticipation of summer, what that was going to be, and how all of that, for the most part, got stopped. And people didn't know what to do. Employers didn't know what to do. School officials didn't know what to do. Health officials didn't know what to do. Everybody was being captured by the brain and the reptilian brain that just says, stop. And it sets into paralysis because we don't know what to do. So the key for us to move forward is we have to get really clear in our brain of what bothers us or what concerns us so much about this shift. So literally, we have to process in our brain of going, what about this change bothers me the most? What concerns me the most? And oftentimes, you really have to kind of peel the onion back. Now, once we are able to identify what the real issue is, then we can move forward. Let me give you an example. The pandemic occurred. We don't know. We've never been in a pandemic before. And we don't know exactly what it means. But boy, by the virtue of shutting the entire world down, then I could say, well, what bothers you about it? Well, it could be everything from, well, what about my graduate program? What about my summer job? What about that trip to Europe I was planning? Well, what about the show I was going to be in? That was my whole life. I was depending on that for my next move in life. So notice that the pandemic is what we call the presenting change issue. The real issue is very personal for each one of us. It could be, oh my gosh, the internship I was planning on having, it's gone away and now I'm delayed in graduating. I won't have the experience I was counting on. And so I've got to address the real issue, not the presenting issue. That's the way I start to motivate myself through change. Now, again, the reptilian brain is really there to protect us. We're really grateful it does this. So once we identify what the real change is, then I can start taking steps to go out and find real information that addresses that issue, not the presenting issue, because I need to deal with this issue. Once I can really identify that, then I can kind of surrender. And then what kicks in next for you and me is what we call the mammalian part of our brain. The mammalian part of our brain is that part that organizes, that puts meaning behind things for each of us, that compares, is this right or wrong? Is this good or bad? The mammalian brain will only kick in when the reptilian brain says it's safe to proceed. Many times, that process literally happens in nanoseconds. Other times, it's a long process. Once our mammalian brain kicks in, we now can kind of sort of sort through the change. What does it mean? What does it not mean? What options have I got? What can I do? It's at that time that some of us find new energy because we're just focusing on, okay, what's the next three things I need to do to get through this? Given what I know and what really concerns me, what activity do I do? What people do I talk to? What information will help me deal with my real change? And that gives me now the sense of control that I'm trying to get on top of. No longer am I at this fearful spot of going, oh my gosh, what do I do? But now I'm starting to move forward with it. Now, the good news is once the mammalian brain has done its predictable process of kind of organizing, then the complex brain, which is what makes us the far distinction in the whole animal kingdom as Hopis. It's what makes us unique. And that part of our brain is the only part of our brain that can futurize, can put meaning to, well, possibly what will this be down the road? Maybe what will this be for me? God, this might be better change. It might really enhance me. But only when the complex brain kicks in can we do that. Now, once we're in that part of our brain, we can understand the change now. We get it. We understand there's benefits from it. Even though it might have been difficult, we can do it. Here's a fun thing to know. The brain processes 2 million bits of information per minute. And just think that any one time, you're not dealing with just one change. You're dealing with probably a dozen or more changes simultaneously. Well, the good news is about the brain, it can process it all simultaneously. But some changes are much more debilitating than others are. Now, you asked me at the beginning of the question, why do some people really embrace change? Most likely, those who are willing to jump into the change and be good with it is because the change is something similar to what they've done before. And they've got enough history to suggest this is going to be okay. It's when it's completely outside of the norm for us that just stops us. So when you and I are going through change, it's important for us to understand the roadmap of what our brain's going to need for us to work through. So that's the major difference of why some people get through change quickly and some people don't. It's because they have had something similar to it. Here's a couple things we know. The brain has the most amazing ability to distort, delete, and generalize information. It's why two people who observe the same event have often very different stories of what they've seen. It's the reason why eyewitnesses at crime scenes are very rarely credible, because the brain is sorting out that which they do not comprehend, that which they can't understand. So, again, the brain is trying to say, I got to make this safe for me, so I'll take information away. I'll distort information. The other thing we can never predict, though, is how long it takes for anybody to get through a change or its intensity. I can't predict that. That is based upon people's personality type. It depends upon their culture, and it depends upon their history of what changes they've gone through. So we do know there is a predictable sequence moving forward and how we get through each of these stages. And we also know that sometimes time does have to heal. I was thinking the other day as I was talking to an individual about a change that happened a little over 10 years ago to this person. And still to this day, they don't want to talk about it, and they don't even want to really recognize that it occurred because it is still so painful for them. In the process of them kind of working through it, they've just not allowed themselves to do it. Until I spent a couple hours with them and I walked them through sequentially how to move through the various stages. As we finished up, she said, "This is the first time I've ever allowed myself to really give my brain a chance to walk through because I had distorted and deleted so much information I just didn't want to hear of. And now that you put it out, I now understand how I can move forward. It's not as fearful for me." So change. You got to love it or you're going to hate it, but you're going to face it.
That is one thing we can count on for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If I had one piece of advice, and in my world, I spend most of my time with CEOs, and their job is to induce change. Very few CEOs are hired to keep things as status quo. And the thing I always say is, if you want to initiate change, you got to start with a very compelling reason as to why the change is occurring. All of us have had change imposed on us. And my guess is, first thing in our mind is, well, why? Why are we doing this? Now, when it's a crisis, like the house is on fire, very few people say, well, why do we have to leave? I don't want to leave the comfort of my home. Well, it's on fire. We just move, right? But when it's not a crisis, remember the brain is working diligently, distorting, deleting information. It might be interesting just to take a look at people's reaction to having to wear masks. That's a change. We don't normally walk around with masks on our faces. And for what reason, some people have said, no, I resist it. I won't do it. And they have very specific reasons, given their experience of why not, that prevents them from complying, right? There's not right or wrong. It's just the way the process is going. So as I take a look at skill sets moving forward, for those of you who are students and getting ready to graduate from the university and go out, increasingly the challenge will be your ability to not simply embrace and get through change, but understand how to invoke change in a way that people can embrace it. And there is a process, and it's understanding how the brain functions and what to do and not to do.
So how can we create a compelling enough why for our teams when we are inducing a change on them?
Yeah, good question. I find always that we tend to project manage change. We know what has to happen first, second, third, fourth, all the way down to the end. And we're pretty good at the project management of change. What we typically are not good at is the leadership of the emotional response that's required. So how do we do this? We've got to start with first being able to build a story as to why should we be doing this? You know, take a look at a change you have self-selected. And by the way, the brain works in a predictable, sequential way, regardless of whether the change is imposed upon you and me or a self-select. So here's one that many people have gone through. This is the year I'm going to get physically fit. No more flabbiness. No more eating McDonald's 24/7. And we start out with all the greatest intention. And about three days into it, oh, my gosh, that burger looks really good. And, oh, it's too cold to go for the run. Oh, and I'm with my friends, and we're going to go out to dinner. And all of a sudden, that resolve is gone. The change is already being eroded. The only way I can do it is I've got to come back and ask myself, so why am I doing this again? Why did I choose to get physically fit? And I have to get really in touch with it. Is it because of health reasons? If I don't get fit, literally my health is compromised and I might die. Or I might not be able to be mobile. I literally will not be able to move. So I've got to get really in touch with what is it that I am willing to do to make that change. And then always keep it in front of me. It's kind of interesting. My wife has in our dressing area a picture of a very fit middle-aged woman who's out for a jog. It's not an inappropriate picture at all. And this hangs up in our big dressing closet, and I've watched that for years. I keep looking up wondering, who is this woman that's dressing with me? So I finally asked my wife, I said, why is that picture up? Do you know this person? Because it was taken out of a magazine of some sort. And she goes, no, but do you notice where the picture hangs in relationship to all my workout clothes? I said, yeah, it's right next to all your running shoes and all your running gear. She goes, yeah. It's because when I get up in the morning and I've committed to myself, I'm going to run every morning. And I wake up and it's dark and it's cold. And I think, I don't want to go. I stare at that picture and remind myself, this is why I'm doing it. Because I want to be that woman. I want to feel that physically fit. So she puts a visual reminder of why are we going to do this? And us keeping that in the forefront is often the motivation we are most needing. It's one of the reasons why we are going through change, particularly significant change. We want and seek for a partner to help us through it. And that could be a physical change, and it can be an emotional change, because we will get into that process and become discouraged. We'll feel like this change isn't worth it, isn't giving the results I wanted, it was a dumb idea. So what do? You make another change, and you start the process all over again. So the brain has a wonderful way to protect us. And if we understand its process and how it drives our thinking and subsequent behavior, it is an amazing machine to move us forward. And I think more than ever, coming out of the pandemic, I think the world will be changed forever. And we're already seeing it as people have had to come up with completely new ideas, how to communicate, how to connect with customers, how to problem solve, how to rear families, how to educate. So this is a time to learn.
It really is. Especially in college, there have been a lot of changes, even in our learning styles. How do you truly keep that at the forefront of your mind? How do you personally do that for you? How do you keep your whys for you?
There are some changes I thoroughly embrace. And largely it's because I've had familiarity with it and my brain has got a neural pathway to go, you know how to do this. I do know, and I'm very well aware of when something new or different comes in front of me, that I find myself internally going, whoa, I don't know if I want to do that or not. And I've gotten so used to understanding myself, and I immediately go to, okay, you just said stop. What is your biggest concern about moving forward? Which means, what information are you missing? What are you worried about if you say yes to this? So I become really aware of it. When I watch others who are trying to lead change, I don't care in what theater it is, whether it's the political theater or the government or in businesses, I'm so keenly attuned of how often leaders do not build a compelling reason as to why. And so we miss the full impact of why the change is even being introduced. Because people will go through the motions to comply with the change, but they don't really embrace the intention of it. So as a follower, I often will say, well, I am willing to support your change, but can you build me the real reason why we're doing this? And it's kind of interesting how often leaders will kind of look at me like, well, because we need to. And I'll say, thank you. Why do we need to? If we don't do it, will life stop? So we, as active participants in change, we need to be active with those who are leading change to make sure they're providing the information we need to really move through it. If I'm going to make a change on my own, I do need to make it personal. And I need to be compelled with, all right, what am I going to do? Why am I doing this? What are the real next steps? Who are the people I really trust that will give me valid and accurate information to help me get through this change when I have an overwhelming urge to just give up? Who will help that? And will I know when I'm successful? What will that look like? You know, sometimes we have a change imposed on us, but we don't know what success will look like if we embrace that change. So sounds good, but will I know if I get there? That's why sometimes, you know, physical fitness programs are great, because either by body weight or physical fitness of muscle or endurance cardiovascularly, that becomes your metric. So we have to put a metric in place for us. What will it look like if we make that change? And then we celebrate it.
That's so interesting to me that you bring up metrics. I was just in a leadership conference this past week, and she brought up American traits.
Yes.
It might just be an American trait to us, but we love our quantitative data. And maybe it is one way to truly motivate us, is being able to see the numbers. But she was saying, like, a bunch of American tourists always go to the Washington Monument, and the first question is, how tall is it?
Yeah.
The French tourists ask, why is an Egyptian obelisk representing George Washington?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting, isn't it?
It is.
You know, that also plays into that our brain is wired for a certain level of achievement satisfaction. Certainly it is bred into, I'm going to say, the North American culture. It's part of the engine of the kind of capitalistic system we're living in, right? To do something faster, better, more efficiently. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that is part of our culture. It doesn't fit everyone. But with that in place, if I'm trying to do something faster, better, more efficiently, I gotta have some metric to tell me if I'm doing it. It's one of the reasons why we love watching, you know, athletes perform in Olympics. It's, are they beating a record, their best record, a world record, a record of somebody else, another country? It's just the way in which we can measure, is all this effort, intellectually, emotionally, physically, is it paying off? Research is really clear behaviorally. If there is not some level of metric that will identify what success will look like, our motivation will be highly compromised.
So how do you measure that when you're in a team of human beings?
Yeah. It starts always with, well, probably depends upon the environment that you're in. You know, sometimes you literally just have to make a statement of, so what's the goal here? What's the goal? Why are we doing what we're doing? Now, it sounds kind of funny, because we sometimes do that just in our relationships, our personal relationships with significant others, with peers. And have you ever stopped and said to a significant other, so what's the goal of our date tonight? It's a pretty odd question to ask, right? And it would be interesting to hear people's answers, because some people say, well, you know, I just want to hang. I want somebody to kind of bounce some ideas off. I want a couple of good laughs. I want somebody sitting next to me as I'm eating popcorn, watching the theater. The goal is just doing that. You know, if you get more specific, somebody might say, the goal of my evening is I want to be validated that I'm liked and that you enjoy my company. That's why I'm going out with you. I haven't heard many people actually have that conversation, but that's what's going through your mind. So We set goals whether we know it or not. And sometimes we vocalize them, and sometimes they're internal. When we're dealing with change, we have to set the goal, which includes why are we doing this? Otherwise, it will just feel like activity, and it will feel hollow, and we'll do it out of compliance and just wait for it to go away. Instead of, okay, why are we here now? What are we doing with it? It's kind of interesting, Sierra, because now as we take a look back over the last 5 months of the changes that COVID has posed on all of us, it's amazing to me to watch how people have utilized it, whether they intended it or not, to really pivot and make some amazing adjustments in their daily lives that they would never have done had this imposition, this change called COVID, not been there. I've also heard people who just go, can we just get back to normal? Can we just go back to the way it was? And I often have to smile and I said, I don't think it will ever go back to the way it was. I think we'll go forward in a whole new way. And yes, it'll be daunting because those who are so comfortable with the past, they don't want to give it up. But those who are saying, okay, it's something new. How do I think about it differently? They will leverage it and they will excel.
Thank you so much, Dan.
You're very welcome.
This has been awesome. I have just two other questions for you. The first is, what would you tell your younger self?
I would tell my younger self is probably lean into change. Don't run from it. Don't let the fear of the unknown prevent you from stepping into it. I think opportunities are presented to us all day long that is something new that we immediately dismiss because we feel uncomfortable about it and we don't know how to do it and we don't want to look awkward. I mean, the last thing you and I want to do in the day is to look incompetent at something. And so that intellectual barrier will often prevent us from embracing things that are new. So I would tell my younger self, whenever there is something new or things aren't the way they are, look at leaning into it versus running from it. Seek to understand it for yourself because therein you're building a neural network in your brain that enables you to be much more robust, see life in a much fuller way, and live life with an open mindset versus a closed mindset of, oh my gosh, we can't do that. I don't want to do that. Can't do that. So that's probably the answer I'd give my younger self. Lean into change. Don't run from the fear of it.
Thank you. That really helps us in this time especially.
Yeah.
My last question is, where can we find you, your works, if we have questions for you?
Great. Thanks for the opportunity. The best way is probably through the website of my organization, which is pretty simple. It is called SSCA.com. We are a behavioral consulting company that is actually based in Los Angeles, California. And we have clients all over the country, all over the world for that matter. And I am a senior partner in that firm. People can find me on our website. They can find out much more specific information about this model we do around change, as well as many other behavioral models. We actually do whole coaching on what motivates achievement, this desire to do something faster, better, more efficiently. We also have a powerful program of what motivates dialogue, which is something we don't have a lot going on right now in our world, of how do we get to dialogue, not debate, not discussion, but how do I get to dialogue and make the richness of that happen? So would love to do that. And you can reach out to me on my website. More than happy to respond to any listeners out there that wants more information. Would love to do that.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on here, Dan. And I hope you have a great night.
Great. Thank you, Sierra.
Hey, it's Sierra, and I hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope it led you to a more positive mindset, a more defined view of leadership, and some action items to take along with you. Don't forget to subscribe and download today's episode, and then post it to your Instagram or Facebook story and tag us at sierra.benson. For more information, you can check out the Moxie website at themoxiemindset.org. Thanks for tuning in today, and I'll see you next week on The Moxie Mindset.